The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org. Today we're bringing you excerpts from this year's 46th annual Vancouver Prison Justice Day Memorial Rally, held back on August 10th at Trout Lake Park.
We're going to start with our teachers, those with lived experience. So it's my pleasure to welcome Eddie Rouse.
I first entered the system in 1975 at the BC Pen. And I first met Claire Culhane in 1976 after the riot there. And for the next 14 years, I spent inside, transferring from one prison to another for various reasons, more for fighting the system. But since then, I've been out finished my degree off at SFU, political science. I'm a founding member of the West Coast Prison Justice Society, which operates prison legal services. And a couple of other board members. I can tell you that, you know, the prison experience isn't easy, never has been. It's become more complex and the more things change, the more they remain the same. The approach of different governments has been haphazard at best. There is no or few educational programs. Women especially are treated much differently now than they were 30 years ago. And that's due to people like Claire Culhane, Carlene Faith, and my friend who just recently passed away, Gail Horry.
It's my utmost pleasure to introduce the next speaker, Ruby Harry from the Chilcotin area.
Hello, everybody. I don't think I need a microphone to hear my voice. I got a pretty loud voice. I gave my voice to the drum and my fist to the drumstick. many years ago. I am the survivor of 9 years of day school. And then by the time I was 18, I was already in a local city cell back home from Anaheim Reserve. And they put me in a city cell that's just a one room and where a man strip searched me. So it started from there. And then it just escalated to years of prison after prison. And I would have been easily one of those names on that wall. And today I'm here to say I love each and every one of them that died for us, suffered for us, and blazed trail for us. Today I'm here to be their voice. Today I'm going to let you know that I am on my last day at Anderson Lodge. I just got my full parole. And I have been in prison most of my life, and you couldn't even tell because I share my story. I've picked up my life, I've picked up the drum, and I went to prison and I didn't stop there. I just started helping people. It didn't matter. I believed I was sent to prison for all my teachings. I was raised by my grandparents. My mom and dad gave me to my grandparents when I was 2 years old. My first language is Tsilkotin, and my second language is English. I hung on to my language because of my grandparents. Today, I speak and write my language. I know my culture, and I know my history, and I know my people, and I have my people that totally support me, and they stood by me through those years, and I couldn't talk about what happened to me in day school. I couldn't even talk about what happened to me by my uncle. I couldn't even talk about what people were doing behind closed doors to young, innocent children, not only girls, boys and girls. And I kept my mouth shut all those years, not talking about it. And I became very, very angry. I started fighting. I started biting. I started reacting in ways that it caused me 26 counts of assault charges, aggravated assault charges, and using weapons. And I ended up with 2 counts of attempted murder charges. And I ended up in prison with a life sentence before I realized that that was enough. I saw my daughter walk into the courthouse. She was pregnant. I couldn't do it anymore. I looked at her and I just took the rap for everything. I kept my mouth shut. I was there when a life was taken and I couldn't talk about it. The system doesn't care who goes in. The system only cares about who's going to pay for it and who can they charge, because at that point it was a political time. It was a political move. Even though they knew that I didn't pull the trigger, they didn't care. They still served me the life sentence, and I asked for life 14 because I didn't want it to go any further at preliminary hearing. And by the time it was said and done, when I went back for sentencing, I was already in prison with men for nearly 2 years at Surrey pretrial. So I've been incarcerated with men for many, many years, and it's like we get treated on. There's no equality. There's no fairness. There's no, like, I had never even seen grass. I never even seen, we looked up in the sky, there was a cage. Our window was like the size of a small little square, and our walls were cement. So I never got to see grass for years. From there, I went to court and then I got sentenced. I took my sentence. I got life 13. And I started my sentence in 2010. And 2018, 10 years later, I walked out of there and with the support of my family. And I've gained so many friends and so many support systems that I've seen so many people die in prison. I've seen so many people die the day they walked out of prison. I've seen so many people die while I was out of prison. And through my parole, day parole, it was like, you didn't matter how good you're doing. I've gained a really promising position with Vancouver Aboriginal Health Society. I'm now a knowledge keeper and I have employment, and I bought a place for my daughter in Williams Lake with my grandson. And I have my own place. That still wasn't enough. They still held on to me right till the last day. And tomorrow I pick up my papers for my full parole. I'm on parole for the rest of my life, and I'm okay with that because now I know that You can't take away my spirit. You can't take away my peace. You can't take away what I have in here, because I have so many people that love me and support me. And it doesn't matter. So, and through all that, I still gained a lot of friends on the inside. A lot of staff are not inhuman. And I can speak on that because they're today, they, you know, I have my own Star Blanket business on the side other than work. They come and buy blankets off me and, you know, they support us. And thank you to Joint Effort. Thank you to all the support system. W2s were in like every 2 weeks coming to visit us to let us know that there is hope. I couldn't see the gate. I didn't even think I was ever going to get out of prison. And like Sam said, they let me know I was never leaving prison. They let me know that I was never going to amount to nothing. And I didn't stop there. I took any kind of programs they had. So every certificate program, every kind of education they had to offer, I took everything. So I walked out of there studying psychology and just continued to be kind, continued to be caring. And they couldn't believe that, because the person who walked in there was supposed to be somebody that's extremely violent and unpredictable. And that's what you call a hurt little girl. That hurt little girl had to go back into each of those rooms and get her spirit back. I had to take myself to those rooms and tell that little girl, you no longer live there. I had to walk into each of those cells and tell that little girl she no longer lives there. She's no longer in prison. And today I can talk about it. Today I can tell anybody my story, because I rised above it. I'm okay today because I have so many people that love me and care about me. And I have lost so many people to overdose. And this afternoon I just got news that I lost my nephew to overdose. And it just never ends. And I would have been easily that person. Because when I went in, I was smoking crack cocaine, I was smoking heroin, and I was drinking every day. I couldn't even go a day without drinking, and I couldn't even go a day without drugs. And through all of that, I survived, and I have four beautiful children. I have stepchildren. I have now a beautiful daughter-in-law. They're all doing good, and they're finally coming home to me. Like, it took them a while to trust me again. Because the girl that went in wasn't the girl that should have been their mother. So when I come out of there, I knew that my grandson would never, ever see me high or drunk, ever. So he's going to be 13, and I'm going on 14 years clean, never touched anything. And I give it all to ceremony and all the sisters and brothers that have passed away to blaze trail for us and really speak loudly on how we were not treated very well in there. It was a story to tell on its own, and the people who are the names on here tell it loud and clear that justice needs to happen. And I'm honored to be here today, and thank you for listening to me, and I'm so happy to see each and every one of you. Thank you. Sachanalia.
I'm Crystal. Just got actually off full parole in May. I had a little bit shorter of a sentence with different things, but when I went in, I had met quite a few very influential people, quite a few of who are actually here this evening. One of them we've recently lost, as most people do know, Cynthia Kavanaugh. We lost her March 23rd. She had just gotten out on parole again, and not even 2 weeks later passed away in her sleep from a heart attack. We had a memorial service for her May 8th. Quite a few people from Joint Effort, as well as friends, elders, family, people she's touched over the years. People whose lives she had personally touched over the years. And one thing that it taught quite a few of us, actually, was when you die in the system, if you do not have a next of kin or all of your information isn't up to date, you get left behind. there was, unfortunately, we were lied to, some people who had found out, some of our friends, we were lied to and told that somebody had claimed her. 30 plus days later, we find out that that was a lie. She had no next of kin, no anything. So we actually had to petition, and it's quite a lengthy process that we're still actually in the middle of now, still trying to claim her remains. So that's something like that I've been dealing with the ministry, with, coroners, with, the legal guardian and trustee, over estates, all kinds of things. All because something so simple as, you know, we were talking the night before she passed away. I'm going back to school to become a funeral director. She's like, you can plan my funeral. I said, no, just give me some time. She passed the next day. If she had have even scribbled that down, something so simple like that, a lot of people get lost in the system because there is nobody to claim them. CSC won't step in for after 90 days. And if you're lucky, you're put into a group cremation, and left with a marker somewhere, if you're lucky. So that's like, honestly, fill out something like a will kit, even just in your wallet. We found out, have a little piece of paper with a couple people's names on it. Someone to actually like call and claim you. It's the most devastating experience you'll ever go through, just trying to keep track of a loved one. It is definitely difficult.
My English name is Eileen Michelle. My Ohkumyuk name is Chiklalawinchisti, which means little woman. I received that name from an elder by the name of Sam Moves Camps from South Dakota. I come from the Statliam Nation, Bridge River Indian Band, Khoishton. I come from a clan of bear dancers, come from Bear Clan. I started going into the prison system at the age of 13. Just a bunch of assaults, you know, mischief, theft. At the age of 15, that's when I committed my index offense. I took someone's life at the age of 15, and I ended up getting a life six sentence. Yeah, I'm a lifer. I'm serving a life sentence. And I was sentenced in 2001. When I was picked up, I don't even recall getting how I got my lawyer. I was so young and naive, I didn't know my rights. And I ended up having a shitty lawyer. And he was like, I basically just kind of like, excuse my language for the kids that are here, but I really got fucked over, you know. After I got sentenced, I ended up like a year into my sentence, I found out through the warden that I was sentenced under second degree, and I just pled guilty because. At first, I didn't plead guilty because I was like, I don't remember. I was intoxicated when I committed my crime. And yeah, a year into my sentence, I found out through the warden that my charge got dropped down to manslaughter from second degree murder. And she's like, you're Eileen, you're So you're serving a life sentence for manslaughter. I said, no, I'm serving a life sentence for second degree. And she's like, well, your name is Eileen Michelle. And I said, yeah. And she's like, this is your date of birth. And I said, yeah. And then, you know, I was like, I was shocked. But at the same time, I didn't understand. I was young. I was 18 when I got transferred to adult. I did 3 years in juvie. And yeah, I was shocked because I was talking with other lifers and, you know, every person that I would tell my story to, they obviously would ask, oh, who are you? You're a lifer. You look so young. You don't even look like you're old enough to be an adult. And I didn't really know how to take it. And then meeting other supports from the outside community coming in inside for us women, they again asked me, how old are you? And I would tell them and I'd share my story. And then just, you know, just over the years, I started learning that my rights were, you know, I got screwed over. And I started educating myself. And I started educating myself about my rights and just really learning that my rights got, you know, that they took advantage of me. And so I'm not saying that I didn't commit my crime. I take full responsibility for what I've done. But for me, as a young Indigenous woman coming from a small town, and I don't even recall getting my lawyer and like how I got him, and it's just like, I don't know, it's, I feel angry about it, but at the same time I try to walk in a good way, and I try to, you know, use my story for the young generation, and like, you know, like, because I don't want to see the younger generation following in my footsteps, because it's so easy. Growing up with a lot of abuse, neglect, living in foster care, and I would always run away from the foster care because I always wanted to go home to be with my mom. And yeah, I grew up getting abused by my own father from a baby up until I was 10, and so I grew up with a lot of anger. And yeah, and it just, but while I was inside, I was taking a lot of programs and really learning. And then they would ask me questions about my childhood. I didn't know. So I started asking my mom and just like really learning about a lot of stuff that I went through. Just, you know, can't help that it makes you bitter. And it's just I don't know. I forgive my dad, though, because I know why he did what he did. He went through residential school, and yeah, he didn't know how to be, a father, a parent, because of all the abuse and shit that he went through. And for my mother, too, like, it's sad to say I don't really know my parents. Due to, you know, foster care and, like, being incarcerated, too. I didn't really have many visits, and it just kind of, I'm kind of used to being alone. But at the same time, I'm, like, trying to change that and trying to allow people to come into my life. And, yeah, I've done a lot of work on myself, and I try to walk in a good way, and yeah, just like kind of give back in a way that in like the Red Road way, I guess. Yeah, I'm totally getting brain fart now. Oh, I just got brain fart. When I was, I also like want to acknowledge my elder, Holy Cow. when I was 18, I didn't know. I thought life, like, because I was so young and naive, I thought life was like the movies. Like, I'm like, oh, they're like, I'm gonna die in prison, you know? And meeting Holy Cow, she asked me about my sentence and I shared it with her. And she's like, oh, you can get out. I'm like, I can never get out. I'm gonna die in here. And she's like, no, you won't. And she just explained what my eligibility dates meant. And I like, and even that's pretty sad that, you know, my own PO and like not knowing that I was able to have, that I could go up for parole. And I asked my PO and she's like, yeah. So I wasn't on the right path while I was inside. I was kind of being a bully and just hanging out with the wrong crowd. And after learning that I could get a taste of freedom. So I did everything that I could to like work on that. And yeah, I'm really grateful that I met her. I think without meeting her and kind of knowing my rights, that I who knows where I'd be at. I don't know if I'd still be inside or, you know, walking this path that I'm on right now. Yeah. I remember after I got sentenced too, when the judge and Crown and the lawyer were talking about my sentence, and I didn't understand, like, they're like saying life 10, life 7. Oh no, we'll just take a year off of her sentence, just, you know, because of all the trauma that she went through. Like now knowing that, and like, that's pretty messed up that, like, I don't know, that just doesn't sit well with me, that just like 1 year, and it's, I don't know. And then so after I got sentenced, just learning that like I got life, and right away I just assumed, I'm like, they're gonna kill me when I get back. So while I was in the city cells, I started like planning my own death, and like I was like, I'm gonna fucking kill myself when I get back, and just like, I'm gonna do myself in before they even have the chance to. I'm not gonna, you know, that's pretty messed up for you know, for the 16 year old wanting to plan that, just because, you know, thinking that I'm gonna get killed for what I did. And yeah, it's just, I don't know, the system is pretty fucked up. And I don't know, even like messing up, going back on, like, there was a few times I messed up while I was out on day parole, and then going back in, I've said it to the National Parole Board, and I said, you know what, I'm like, just because I have a bad day and I mess up, I go back to prison for 2 years. As a lifer, you go back to prison for 2 to 3 years, and you have to do these programs, and it's just like, I'm like, it's like, what, you can have a bad day? And I would kind of use that, and I'm like, what, so you get, like, you'd get mad or whatever, you wanted to go out and, you know, but you can have a bad day, but I can't. And I'm like, I'm owning my shit, and I know I fucked up, but, you know, going back in for 2 years as a lifer, that's what happens. So I don't know, it's just pretty messed up. And I'm like, that's a lot of tax money that you're using. I'm like, you have to understand, being in prison is easy for me. I'm institutionalized, but like being out in society, like I have to work my ass off just to stay out, you know? And it is hard. It is, like, I never like had like a real job like for a while because I was so intimidated by it, because I was inside since I was like 15. I didn't know how to communicate. I didn't know how to like open a bank account. I didn't know, you know, there's like all these things. And then, so yeah, I was like, sad to say, I was okay with being inside. It sucked, but then I adapted to it really quick because that's like comfortable for me. And but yeah, I think this is my fourth time on day parole. I've been eligible for my full parole since 2005, May 2005. And finally, next month, I get to go up for my full parole, and it's scary. I am scared. That's a lot of freedom for me. I'm pretty institutionalized, and it's like, I don't know what to do. You know, it's like, I can honestly say I'm scared, but I'm willing to do it because I have a lot of fight in me. I've made it this far, and yeah. Also having this bear regalia, I've been wanting to put a regalia together for a while, but the path that I was going on, I was struggling with my own addiction. I didn't want to lose this, you know, lose what I worked so hard for. And because the elders, they say the old ones can take this if I don't, you know, if I don't look after it. And I'm not willing to part with my regalia, so, yep. And yeah, I'm not sure what else to share. Oh, I guess we're going to be singing. But Cookstam, for listening and for being here and supporting all of us, and yeah, and listening. Cookstam.
Prison Justice Day Committee organizes this annual memorial in solidarity with prisoners who have died inside and also with prisoners who are still fighting to live. Please do support our work. You can do that by buying merch. There's a join effort table. There's PJD merch. But also by calling for abolition in your everyday lives, because fundamentally, this event is not a nonprofit, it's not a government entity, it's a group of people who believe that we can have a world without prisons. So we are the folks from the organizing committee, and also want to recognize Join Effort. Many of you have probably heard about them. They've been going into prisons for many years, but have been barred as of late by bureaucratic policy that basically keeps people out. So my name's Meenakshi, and I'm one of the folks who organizes this, and I'm going to pass it over to my comrades.
Thank you, hi, folks. I'm Maheen. I just want to point out that this year, unfortunately, we had to add a new banner to our list of names. Thanks, Ada, for making the banner, and it's really awful. It's awful that we have to have a new banner for today. I have Sharpies. If you do have a friend or a family member who's passed in prison and you would like to add their name, come and find me and we can add the name to the banner. It's updated up until this morning, but I'm sure there's always, unfortunately, more people. But yeah, thanks so much for coming.
Hello, my name is Ada, and I'm going to read you a short poem titled All Too Much, poem for Benjamin Toussaint, inmate who died in custody after repeated cries for help. Too much lockups, too much deprivation, too much suppression to a sovereign nation, where suicide is the situation that we're facing, rather than the day's ins and outs, death seems like a better way out. No matter how loud we shout, they don't hear us. It's their job, but they won't come near us. They say it because they fear us, and they're the ones that'll clear us. It's all too much. This poem is by a person called Nicholas DiNardo, and there's a little postscript that says, this poem was written as the author witnessed Benjamin Toussaint's body left lying alone on the ground. He committed suicide after repeated cries for help. This is dedicated to Benjamin Toussaint and his family, written with the hopes of changing and raising awareness of the conditions Toussaint and many others lived and continue to live in, and the racism that they endured and continue to endure. Thank you.
coming out and recognizing this horrible system, and I would be remiss in not noting the name of Yannick LePage, who died in Surrey pretrial just a couple weeks ago. And I think that, again, like, this violence of prisons is so invisible, we're so removed, and we are literally barred from knowing about what goes on. So this young Indigenous man died while in the custody of BC Corrections, but there's no press release. There's no information. The only reason I knew is because someone sent me a GoFundMe to help raise family fees for the family. And I just want to remind people, like, prison is not this faraway thing. It's not just in the States. I know a lot of people think that it's across the border. It is absolutely here. You've heard so many people talk about how it's a continuation of residential schools, of day schools, of the foster care system, of the mental health system. And fundamentally, we just need to get rid of this sick, toxic structure that is imposed by colonial governments here. So all my love to folks who are inside, to folks who are supporting people inside, to folks who have family members who are inside, and to folks who are out here fighting for parole, for day parole. Like, congrats, Little. That's amazing. Yeah. Thank you all.
The Solidarity Notes Choir is going to share a song with us tonight to uplift our spirits and keep us fighting strong. Thank you.
Future's not for sale, native sovereignty is real. Land is not for taking, no, you have not got a deal. Good earth is generous, greed's a tired game. Past 500 years now, and the fight looks much the same. No, we won't go like this. We shall resist. People across the nations crying out to Mother Earth. Tricky occupation, how much is a dollar worth? Good earth is generous, greed's a tired game. Past 500 years now, and the price looks much the same. No, we won't go.
We've just heard stories from this year's Vancouver Prison Justice Day Memorial Rally. To watch the recording of the full event, go to facebook.com/prisonjusticevan. For more information, visit the West Coast Prison Justice Society at prisonjustice.org. And for support for prisoner justice activism, visit prisonjustice.ca. CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.